It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning and welcome to Fed Talk. I am Tony Brunetti from Federal Employee Defense Services, filling in for the attorneys at Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. And it is November, and that means it's open season in the federal government. And I'm not talking about open season on federal employees, which seems to be the case lately out in the press. No, this is the time of year when federal employees can make important changes to their health or other insurance benefits. So we like to do an annual show about the open season, and that's what we're going to do today. And to assist me with our discussion, we're fortunate to have two experts on federal employee benefits in studio with me. First, like we do each year, we have Walt Francis. Walt is an economist and the author of the Annual Consumer's Checkbook Guide to Health Plans for Federal Employees, which really for the past three decades has been the Bible for information about health plans and other insurances in the federal government. Walt, good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning.
And our second guest is my good friend Joan Melanson from Long-Term Care Partners. Long-Term Care Partners administers the federal government's long-term care insurance program. So Joan is here to tell us about long-term care options for federal employees, and we're going to bring her on a little bit later in the show. But right now, Joan, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning and happy November, everybody.
The day after Halloween. Just a reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. If you'd like to join our discussion today, you can speak directly to one of our guests by calling in at 1-877-936-9333, or you can always email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Walt, I'd like to start with our discussion with you today. Can you explain to our listeners who may be new to the federal government what open season is really all about and why it's so important to them?
Sure. The federal government 50 years ago made a wise decision. Actually, it wasn't even really its choice. It was sort of forced to it by the politics of the situation then, to allow federal employees not just a choice of one plan, like traditionally large employers do. The HR people pick the plan. Everybody has to take it or leave it. But to offer a wide choice of plans, and you get to open season is the time of year when you get to pick which plan do I want to be in for next year. And the deal always has been that there's no limitations related to pre-existing conditions. So you can be in the hospital on December 31st and still be joining your new plan on January 1st. In the entire country, there are over 250 plans participating in this program. In all the big metro areas, there's 20 or more. In D.C. metro area, there's about 25 plans, plan options open to everybody.
Historically, how has that gone up over the years? Is there more people in, make it more competitive each year?
It's gone up and down. There was a period when there were a lot more HMOs than there are today, and then there was a lot of consolidation and so on. So it's actually a lower number than it once was. OPM works hard to try to bring in more plans because turns out the Blue Cross plans are dominant in this market. They have over the two big Blue Cross plans have over half the total federal employee and annuitant enrollment. And, but there's a lot of scrappy other plans competing for the same business.
Let's talk a little bit about your checkbook, your guide to health plans for federal employees. As I noted at the start of the show, it really has been the Bible for three decades. And, you know, like I was commenting, you know, I'm a former federal employee, and I remembered many, many years ago being new to the federal government and being quite overwhelmed when I was presented, you know, with this material and how to select, you know, and then on open season, you know, what was I supposed to select? And I really did a sort of close your eyes and just point a finger on a piece of paper. But tell us about what the checkbook does to tell and highlight what federal employees' options are.
Your problem is the one we set out to solve, and we think we solved it pretty well. Rather than face people with 20 odd plan choices, each with a different deductible, each with different cost sharing, each with a different premium. I mean, it's just, it's impossible for any very intelligent human being to compare those choices rationally. So what we do is we develop very sophisticated computer programs that use actuarial information on how likely people are of various ages and family sizes and health conditions to incur expenses at what kind of level. And then we actually run each plan's benefits through the computer and figure out how well you do in plan A in a good year, an average year, or a bad year. And we make the exact same comparison for plans B, C, D, et cetera. And then we're able to actually estimate how much money you're likely to save in dollars, taking into account both your out-of-pocket expenses from bills that you know, your share of the bills and the premium, how much you're likely to pay out-of-pocket in each plan, and how much money you can save by joining this plan instead of the other. And it turns out it's big bucks. There are lots of federal employees who could save $2,000 or more next year. Think about this. We're in, the third year without a pay raise? How about giving yourself a $2,000 pay raise by making a wise plan choice decision? And we give you a very simple, you know, you go on our website, and you answer a few questions, like your age and so on, and within a couple of minutes, you're at a results page, and you can stop there and choose a plan. Go to the top of the page, and that's where you can save the most money.
So I'm sure you get this question all the time. What's the best plan? And I'm sure your answer is, the lawyer, famous lawyer answers, it depends. And it depends on a lot of different variables, where you're at in your life, you know, are you planning a family? You know, are you sick? Are you healthy? You know, tell us a little bit about those considerations.
You're right. It all depends. And there is no one best plan for everybody, that's for sure. Well, one of the things it depends on is what kind of plan you're willing to be in. And the HMOs are quite a different model than the fee-for-service preferred provider plans. And then there's a set of new kids on the block, the high-deductible plans, okay? So there's three distinct groups, though they kind of overlap a little bit and shade into each other. And people have strong preferences. Some people would never not be in an HMO because it's so convenient and eliminates red tape and all the advantages of HMOs. Other people wouldn't go near an HMO because they want to be totally in charge and be able to pick any doctor they want anytime, any place. But so that's one issue. Another issue is, what plans are my doctors in, okay, in this era of networks? By the way, in the D.C. area, we actually also tell you, you type in your doctor's name or multiple names, and we'll tell you which plans he or she is in the network. And then there's your health circumstances, are we going to have a baby or not, et cetera. So all those things go into the mix. We find, though, that there are very good plans in all three categories. Certain plans seem to come ahead on top in our ratings every year. In the HMO world, for example, the two Kaiser options are always right at the top. And there's an Aetna open access option and a CareFirst option that are very close behind. So there's quite a nice choice of inexpensive HMOs. All the high deductible consumer driven plans are good buys.
Explain the high deductible, if you will, to our listener. What does that mean?
Okay. The idea is, it's really a philosophical thing. If you really want to be in charge of your health care, including managing your spending, the high deductible plans say, all right, the deal is you pay the first couple of grand up front in this very large deductible, the first couple of grand, and you better be frugal in your choice of physicians because you're paying the full bill, okay? But in addition, and then you hit regular insurance coverage. But in addition, they give you a health savings account. And the savings account is like typically for a family, $1,000, $1,500. And you can use it or not use it to help largely offset that high deductible. Or you can save it up and let it grow over time, year after year, accumulate. And so you have an incentive. It's your money. And so you have an incentive to use that money frugally. We find these plans are overall very good buys. They have excellent catastrophic protection. So, you know, if you get hit by lightning or something, you're still well off.
I want to be clear one thing, so our listeners, you know, understand. The Checkbook Guide, it's not a federal publication. You guys are a private entity, so individuals can get on the website and buy it, and agencies can also buy it as well. And just the website is guidetohealthplans.org. So I'm wondering. Do you get difficulty from the carriers getting information from them to plug it into your models?
No, not really. They tend to be very cooperative. They all think they have good products, and want to make sure they get, you know, rated as well as, you know, we're honest about it, but we don't pull any punches as to, you know, our favorite example of that is one of the less good buys is the Blue Cross Standard option, which is the most popular plan. But one of the very best buys is the Blue Cross Basic option. So, you know, it's easy for us to be neutral. We actually, though, get most of our information through the plan brochures that are written every year. They're sort of 100 pages
publicly
long.
Publicly available.
And we pour through them to make sure we get the benefits right for every plan. Yeah.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm here with Walt Francis, the author of the Consumer's Checkbook Guide to Health Plans for Federal Employees. We'll continue our discussion after our first break and a word from our sponsor.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied, but today GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said, it's a thought, but Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is. GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to geico.com. Then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and I'm talking with Walt Francis, the author of Consumer's Checkbook Guide to Health Plans for Federal Employees. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call toll-free at 1-877-936-9333, or you can always email us a question at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, well, let's just get down to brass tacks here and give our listeners some information that they really want to know. You know, is they want to know about the best plans. You know, we understand that there are a variety of variables that they're going to have to look at, and your checkbook guide, you know, breaks that out for them. But generally speaking, what are some of the best plans out there?
Okay. Well, I already mentioned three or four of the best HMO buys. If you're interested in a high deductible plan, or consumer driven, which is a close cousin, APWU. Let me just say, there's a bunch of postal unions and other employee organizations that sponsor plans. You don't have to be a member of that union to join the plan. Some of them are spectacular competitors in the system. APWU, consumer-driven plan, the letter carriers, NALC, has a new consumer-driven plan this year, and we rate it very highly. GEHA, high deductible plan. GEHA is another carrier with multiple offerings. And Aetna, high deductible plan. So those, and there are several others that are scarcely inferior. Among the national plans, this is the traditional PPO, fee-for-service plans. These are the ones that sort of three-fourths of all the people are in. We rate NALC high option, GEHA standard option, Blue Cross basic, three in general. This is across a lot of different family sizes and a lot of age ranges. These tend to be very good buys, plans that pretty much everybody should be looking at, even if they're going to stick with some other one. You at least ought to know what you're giving up or not getting, so to speak, by sticking where you are or joining a different plan. So those are all excellent choices. There are a few foreign service plan, if you're eligible for it, you know, is very good.
Yeah, that's the question I have. If you're going to be overseas at all, Is there a specific plan that's better for that, for my friends in the Foreign Service or our other law enforcement DOD entities that serve overseas?
Well, let's distinguish between, let's say you're just, you know, it's a vacation abroad or something. Uh-huh. All the plans cover you anywhere in the world,
right,
for emergency care, no matter where you are, no matter what the circumstance. So don't worry. You don't have to worry about being an HMO or something like that. You're covered abroad. If you're going to be stationed abroad, the plans that GIHA and Blue Cross both pride themselves on having very good sort of foreign service, but the two other plans that a lot of foreign, you know, if you're in the Foreign Affairs or Intelligence Agency or DOD, are the Compass Rose and Foreign Service plans, and of course that's their bread and butter are people who were stationed overseas, so they're very good at that, and we rate both plans highly.
We've been talking about federal employees, which is the primary focus of the book. But we should mention the plans all cover retirees as well. You know, are there special considerations? You look at that within the plans, and then what about Medicare Part B?
Okay. Well, there's lots of differences for retirees. Think of them as two groups, 55 through age 64, and then 65 plus, where Medicare comes into play. First place, retirees lose the tax-preferred status of their benefits, so of their part share of the premium. So the premium looms especially large in retiree choices because it's a bigger part of your total cost. So low-premium plans look even better for those people than they otherwise might. Once you hit Medicare eligibility, you have to decide. Most people, virtually, it's automatic to take Medicare Part A. That's the hospital part because it's free, you know, and it's why wouldn't you want it? Part B, the doctor part, is expensive. The premium is around $1,300 a year, okay, and it's even higher if you're a high income retiree. Because at an adjusted gross income level of 85 grand for self only and 170 grand for a couple, you pay, if your income is higher than that, and it is for a lot of high, you know, if two retired GS-15s, you will exceed those thresholds. And you're going to pay more than the regular Medicare Part B premium. But even if you're paying just the regular premium, the question is, why do I need to pay two premiums all of a sudden for two health plans? Went up until age 64, I was just pleased as punch in my, you know, Blue Cross plan or Kaiser plan or whatever. What impels me to go buy Medicare Part B? And there's pros and cons to that choice. One of them is that the plan that does let you go out of network. Okay, most of the national plans will cover you very well. They give you a special wraparound benefit so that if you're in Part B and Part A, you won't even have to pay the deductible or the cost sharing. You know, the $25 a doctor visit thing. And that's worth several hundred dollars a year for most people. So you're not really losing all that money you spent on Part B. The other thing is, it is sort of political insurance to take Part B, which is, what if the Congress does something bad to the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program? I'd rather be in Medicare as a fallback. And if you don't sign up at age 65, leaving aside if you're still employed, you could put that off until you actually retire. But once you're retired at age 65, there's a penalty of 10% a year for every year you're not enrolled in Part B. So there's a lot of pluses and minuses. I know a lot of people who think it's foolish to sign up for Part B, and others who say right. They sleep better at night because they have it, and I think they're both right.
Yeah, you know, I've heard it presented both ways. You know, during open season, most federal agencies have their health fairs, and this is kind of an open time where carriers can come in and set up a booth and show off their information and their plans to federal employees. And I go to them as well for my day job with the liability insurance, and I'm always surprised to hear how many people are coming up to various booths and asking about dental and vision. So what is your take on the dental and vision plans, you know, in the federal government?
Okay. We now have three ways to get dental and vision coverage. Okay. One, your regular insurance plan, Blue Cross or GIHA or Kaiser, whatever. Many of them offer a rather substantial dental benefit. Okay. And at no extra premium. Second way is you can set up a flexible spending account, and everyone should do that, and most people don't, and it's another open season choice. That's a way to tax shelter the money you know you're going to spend. on out-of-pocket costs, on what the dentist charges, et cetera. The third way is to sign up for separate dental or vision plan. And there are three new companies participating in that set of plan choices this year. There are quite a number of choices. They're all good, but they vary. Some of them cover your kid's getting her braces, you know, better than orthodonture, better than others. Some have a waiting period, some don't. Some have a maximum amount they'll spend on your behalf in a year. Most of them do, but some of those amounts are $10,000, and some of them are only $2,000. So that, if you have a really expensive set of problems, that matters. What I generally tell people to do, though, is this is the case where you really want to have a dentist who's in the network before choosing a plan. You need to ask your dentist, what network or networks are you in? Because most of the saving from joining these plans comes from the reduced fees that the dentist agrees to charge, and then the dental plan may only cover half of the more expensive things, but since you're already getting a big discount on those, they're really paying more than half, and that's where you save money. So yeah, if you've got a mouthful of problems, by all means.
Is it safe to assume that if you're thinking there's a possibility that you're going to need a fair amount of dental work, should you be looking at a separate standalone dental plan?
Or, absolutely, yes. Yeah. A lot of the national plans cover the inexpensive stuff, the annual checkup, pretty well. But they're not gonna pay for your crowns and bridges in a significant way, though a few do. So, you know, we rate one of our comparisons is compare all the plans that offer any kind of dental coverage and the freestanding dental plans side by side, and you can see which, and the premiums are different by family size and so on, so, and you can decide which one matches your circumstances.
So in addition to getting a copy of the Checkbook Guide to Health Plans for Federal Employees, what do you tell, you know, federal employees that they need to really think about, you know, what is the template that you give them when they are sitting down and trying to select a plan?
Okay, the number one thing is do actually spend half an hour or an hour on this problem. Don't ignore it. Don't wait till the last day of open season and say, oops, it's Redskins game I got to catch. You know, no. Go spend, it's not fun to look at insurance, okay? People hate it. But spend half an hour or an hour, no matter what else you do. Two or three things. Number one, think about your own health situation and your family's health situation. What's changing? What might be worse or better? Okay, and that might lead you down a certain path. Look at the brochure of the plan you're in today. There's a little page up near the front called How We Change. Make sure there's no change that's bad for you. Review the little summary of benefits at the back of the brochure. Make sure that you remember all the oh my gosh, I didn't realize the deductible was that high kind of stuff. And you can use the brochure to look up maternity. There's a section on maternity in every brochure. That's the minimum. Think about your situation. Look at least the brochure of the plan you're in. But you can go online at OPM. You could do side-by-side comparisons. You can download all the brochures. You can look at them as Adobe PDF files on your computer. And the beauty there is you can search on something like hearing aid benefits, okay? And you can look at, you just type in hearing, and boom, you'll get to the hearing aid page in Plan X, and you can do again for Plan Y. We offer all that from our website as well. As well as our summary analyses and summary comparisons, which nobody does the way we do. And that way, okay, another, you mentioned health fairs. That's a great place to go, hey, chat with some of the plan representatives at your agency's annual health fair. It's, they'll give you little free gifts, and you can pick up some brochures, and you can ask them your questions. Hey, how well do you cover having a baby, okay, and, you know, et cetera.
What if we're in the season of sequestration and furloughs and things like that, and federal employees' money may be tight. If their major goal is to save money, how do you advise them? You know, how do they evaluate? You know, what they're trading off? You know, say versus a high deductible plan versus what they're paying for the insurance, you know.
Well, that's exactly the trade-off that we perform the calculations for you, okay, mm-hmm. on Checkbook's guide. So we will show you that a family of four of your you know, age range or whatever is likely to spend, you know, $2,300 a year on average under Plan A and $4,300 on average under Plan B. And so the question is, why aren't you switching from Plan B to Plan A to save yourself the $2,000? And there may be a good reason not to, you know, that matters to you. For example, you may really not want to join a Kaiser HMO. On the other hand, maybe you ought to rethink the question of, wait a minute, why don't I want to join a Kaiser HMO? Check them out a little bit, okay? Ask your friends and neighbors how their experiences. And lo and behold, you know, that may, it's a little bit of homework and a little bit of attention to find out how much money you can save.
I mentioned guidetohealthplans.org is a website where they can get more information and get a copy, order a copy of the book. I really would encourage agency benefit officers to take a look at it. There, you can purchase it for the employees. It's an excellent resource for the benefit officers to use and make available to their employees.
And a lot of them do. By the way, I want to be clear. It's we have a physical book version, but the main version that we urge people to use is the online version because we can do more things. And the agencies on our homepage that we list the agencies that are already subscribed.
Because it's 2013.
We do everything online. We're converting. We'll be ready with 2014 in a few days. But we already know who's buying next year. Okay. So we'll, you know, your agency may have already bought it. A lot of agencies buy it and then don't adequately publicize the. After all, who really wants to read that annual open season email you get from the HR people? You know, and it may be on the third screen down. Oh, by the way, you have free access to Checkbooks Guide. So we urge people to you know, take a look. And, you know, you don't have to, you know, that's your choice as to whether to use our guide. But we have a lot of satisfied customers.
Yeah, it looks like it's a tremendous resource. We have to stop here for our second break. When we come back, I will invite Joan Melanson from Long-Term Care Partners to join our discussion and talk about long-term care insurance for federal employees. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
GEICO's famous for saving people money on car insurance. And now, if you're a federal employee, you could be saving even more. In fact, you may already qualify for a special federal discount from GEICO. If you're a federal employee or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, FLIOA, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you could be saving hundreds of dollars. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings. GEICO got its start back in 1936, specifically to serve federal employees. Today, we're still making it easy for federal employees to save money on car insurance. If you're a federal employee, you may qualify for a special federal employee discount. Or if you belong to an association like BIG, FEW, Young Government Leaders, and many others, you may also qualify. See how much you could be saving. Contact GEICO today to get a quote and be sure to request your special federal savings.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Tony Vernetti, and we've been talking for the last half hour with Walt Francis, the author and principal author of the Consumer's Checkbook Guide to Health Plans for Federal Employees. And this is our annual show on the open season in the federal government. And at this time, I'd like to bring Joan Melanson from Long-Term Care Partners in to tell us about the federal long-term care insurance program. Joan, why don't you start by first explaining to our listeners a little bit about the origins here. You know, why was there a need for a federally sponsored long-term care program?
Well, very good question. The Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program was implemented back in 2002. It was passed into legislation signed by President Clinton in 2000. The federal government looked around and said, what are private employers offering? And long-term care insurance was one of those benefits that had been offered by private companies for some time. And, you know, You think back and just scale back time. When Social Security was implemented back in the 30s, life expectancy was 62. And now, think of it, people are living much longer. And I've read some things that say you can expect, many people can expect to spend a third of their years in retirement. And so what does that mean? The good news is that people are living longer. And the not so good news is, the older you get, the higher the probability of needing some kind of care. Over 65, it's a 70% probability. So what does that mean to people? And I think the issue of long-term care has become a bigger issue, and it's going to become a bigger issue as people are living longer.
Maybe if you can briefly just explain where like, say, Medicare or where the federal employees' health benefit plans, where they fall short, and where, how does the long-term care fit within that?
There's a lot of confusion. I mean, just like Walt was saying, there's so much going on, and I can't, insurance is not top on what people love to do. They're not going to put Walt's book right next to their bed and read it. Insurance is just not that exciting to people. So they look around, it's all these, all this confusion. And a lot of people assume that some health program or some plan that they have or some government program is going to cover long-term care. It could be wishful thinking, it could be lack of knowledge, or it could be total denial. But the reality is that your FEHB plan or any health plan that you have covers things when you're getting better. And to make it as simple as possible, when you go to the doctor's office, that's health insurance. When you go to the hospital, that's health insurance. When you're talking about Obamacare, that's health insurance. These are things when you're getting better. Long-term care insurance is when you're not going to get better. And that's a whole different thing. And it's not provided by a skilled professional, is provided by someone that can help you with what we call activities of daily living. It's a fancy way of saying, get up in the morning, get out of bed. You get dressed, you have breakfast, you eat, all of those things. That is not health insurance. And that's the missing piece that a lot of people haven't thought about or planned for. And it's a thing that may cause you to divert a lot of your assets and income towards paying for something. If you haven't planned for it, it could be a shock to people.
What have you found? You mentioned just being unaware, but like with any discretionary insurance, there's always barriers in place for people to purchase it or consider it. In the federal sector, what have you found to be the most significant barriers there?
Biggest barrier is denial. When we feel people should think about
this. Nobody wants
this
to think they're going to get sick.
Oh, my God. I mean, we go to health fairs that you talked about because, we like to, our goal is to educate people. And the average age of purchase for federal employees is 51. We're saying, look at long-term care insurance when you're reviewing your retirement plan. So you're talking to people who are 50 years old. And when I start talking about the uplifting things of needing help with eating, bathing, dressing, you would think I had leprosy. Nobody wants to talk to me. No one. I mean, really, we're talking today. I'm running marathons. I'm taking care of the grandkids. I'm traveling all over the world. I'm doing all these things. And you're talking to me about needing help with eating, bathing, dressing? Really? This is something that our average time when people need care is 73. So we're saying, Tony, I want you to think about something that you're going to need 20 or 30 years or even 40 years out in the future. And you look at me like, wait a minute, I'm on a different planet. And I think denial is the biggest thing. The people that are most interested in this product are those people who have had a personal experience. They're taking care of family members. They've seen it. Those are the ones that come up and say, I need this stuff. And the second I look at them, I say, you've had a personal experience. It's close to them. They see not only the physical, the financial impact, but the physical and emotional impact on the family that's associated with it. Those are the people who really get it. But even when you get it, it's not an uncomplicated decision. We in the insurance industry like to make things complicated. Walt was talking about trying to compare all these different plans I mean, you look through it and you say, I don't know, what's right for me? And you get stuck. I don't know what's right for me. I don't want to make the wrong decision. And by the way, when I say to you, you have to pay into this plan until you use it 20, 30, 40 years out, you go, oh my God. So have I given you enough obstacles?
I would think, see, one I was waiting for was cost.
Well.
You know, I think, you know, everybody is first looking at their pocketbook. What can you say? You know, it's interesting you said you want to educate. You know, we should mention long-term care as partners, you know, has this platform of doing education and getting information out there. That's part of the mandate. But in doing that, I mean, do you offer any guidance over, you know, what's the long-term cost going to be, you know, versus not having it, what's going to cost if you have an event and things like that? Are there models like that that folks could look at?
Well, we have an excellent website at LTC, www.ltcfeds.com. And we have a few things there that are very helpful. One is the cost of care where you live. Because I can talk to you about the average cost of care, and I can say, you know, today it's $75,000 on average for a nursing home. But I can also say my mom's in a nursing home, and we're 30 miles north of Boston, and in a semi-private room, it's over $150,000. Averages are averages. So, you know, you can go online and look at where you live and see what the cost of care is. I also suggest you call facilities in your area and see what it costs. The other thing is that we have a cost of we have a premium calculator that will help you. There are a lot of tools there that will help you on the costs. But I can tell you, in terms of cost, you need to understand the value. If you don't see the value of this insurance, whatever cost you look at is going to be too much. And I'm a big believer that the value, understanding the benefits, is what determines whether you make the decision to purchase. Now, having said that, I can also tell you the younger you are, the less expensive it is. And that's why we encourage people to look at this product when they're younger.
That's the question I have, is do you have a recommendation as to what age an individual should be when they start to seriously, you know, consider this product? I mean, I've heard, you know, 50s, 60s, but it seems like you may be suggesting you should evaluate it even earlier.
I'm going to put on my lawyer hat, even though I'm not a lawyer, and say it depends. Depends on so many things. There is no perfect age. In fact, there would actually be a perfect age if I want to be flip, which is just before you use it.
Right.
Absolutely. So if you had a crystal ball and you knew you were going to need it at age, you know, 75, you would purchase it at 74, just before you needed it, because you wouldn't pay in premiums for very long.
You also go to the horse track, too.
Yes, you go to the horse track. So it's, you know, the best age is going to be dependent on a lot of things. It's going to I can tell you one thing that's certain is the younger you are, the less expensive it is. I can also tell you that the younger you are, the higher probability that you'll get through our underwriting process, because this is a medically underwritten product. Now, having said that, there's no perfect age, and that's one of the questions we always get. There's no perfect age because it depends upon what's your financial situation, what's your home situation at the time, because you have to be able to afford this product. So there are a lot of factors, just like what plan do I choose? Again, it depends. It depends upon the factors that I talked about.
You mentioned that it costs less the earlier you get rolled, you know, with your ages. Is the cost locked in, you know, or is there chances that the premium can be increased over the years?
That's a very, very good question. And those people that are tuned into, they either have had the product for a while, or they've read about read the newspapers about long-term care insurance. The premium that you start paying when you are enrolled in the product is the premium you pay year after year. Having said that, there can be a premium increase. These premiums are not guaranteed, and we have had a premium increase in the first contract. As I mentioned, we started this program back in 2002, and in 2009, we did have a premium increase of 25% for some portion of our enrollees. And if you look outside, you're going to see this as well in other private insurance plans. This is not unique to the federal program. Why is this happening? You know, this is a product that you're going to use way out in the future. And the actuaries look at 50 years out in the future, and they've got a whole bunch of factors they're looking at. But the most critical factor that has caused rates, not only for this program, but other programs to increase, has been the artificially low and prolonged interest rate environment. That has played havoc, not only with long-term care insurance, but with other investment vehicles as well that depend upon interest rates. That's been it. So what I like to caution people is look at this premium, make sure it's affordable today, but think in your mind, can I afford a couple of rate increases while I have this product just to cover yourself so that you're not surprised?
It's funny, the one thing I know about actuaries is that they're always wrong. We're going to stop here to hear a word from our sponsor. When we return, we'll wrap up today's discussion about open season with Walt and Jane. Joan, you're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Today, my journey to help save people money on car insurance brought me to our nation's capital. I was taking a stroll around the mall when I met a very nice gentleman from Ohio who asked me a question. What kind of word is GEICO anyway? An excellent question, I replied. I told him that GEICO isn't a word, it's an acronym, and it stands for Government Employees Insurance Company. I explained how GEICO actually got its start 75 years ago to help federal employees save money on car insurance. Interesting, the man replied, but today GEICO saves lots of people money on car insurance, including me. Have you ever thought about changing the name? I said, it's a thought, but Gecko sounds like GEICO. If we change the name, I might be out of a job. We strolled a bit more, stopped for some tea, and we both agreed. It's probably best to keep the name just like it is, GEICO.
To get a free rate quote, go to GEICO.com, then buy online or over the phone. If you're a federal employee or belong to an association like Big, Few, Young Government Leaders, and others, you may qualify for a special discount. Contact GEICO today to request your special federal savings.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're entering our last segment of the show. Joan, we were talking off air here a little bit about, you know, what I felt was, you know, the major impact, you know, as to, and why people should seriously consider long-term care. You know, it's for your heirs, your children, the people who would have to be there to care for you.
Well, you're absolutely right. That is the most critical thing. Families take care of families. If something were to happen to you, Tony, it's really not about you at that point. It's about your wife. It's about your kid. It's about, you know, anybody else in your family or your friends. They will take care of you. And a big piece of that is caregiving. And right. Anyone who has done caregiving can see the strain and the stress and the anxiety it has, not only the person doing it, but on everybody else, too. Because, you know, if you have a number of siblings, if you're taking care of a parent, who's doing the work, who's paying for it, who's doing the day-to-day heavy lifting, that causes friction. People have different ideas. The caregiving and over a prolonged period of time really takes its impact on people. And that's why
the financial impact too, no?
Well, it is. First of all, you have the financial, which is what, you know, the major thing when we talk about this, when we say it provides a certain amount of money every day to cover the cost, whether you're in a nursing home, but more importantly, people want to stay at home. And the biggest showcase benefit of the Federal Long-Term Care Insurance Program is we have informal home care, which allows family members and friends to be paid to take care of someone in their home. That's where people want to be. And that's the most important thing. But you have the financial element, you have the actual physical of taking care of people, and you, most importantly, you have the emotional piece of it. So what I like to say to people is think about this when you're doing your retirement planning. Make a decision. Insurance may not be right for everybody. Think about whether it makes sense. The federal program may not be right for you. And we suggest that you look at the private plans. We have a comparison worksheet on our website. Look at other private plans. Decide what makes sense to you.
What about if you're already in a private plan?
If you're already in a private plan, I do not suggest that you lapse that plan. You've paid into it, particularly if you've paid into it for a long time. Because what happens, Tony, is that you are paying a premium at the rate in which you enrolled in that plan. So if you've been paying in for 10 years and you say, I'm going to jump this plan for the federal program, I would say absolutely not. First of all, you're 10 years older. The premium's going to be a lot more expensive. Secondly, you might not even pass underwriting. And then you'll be SOL. You won't have a plan. So I say to people, if you want to maybe purchase a supplemental plan to add to it because you don't feel you have sufficient coverage, that's one thing. But I never recommend that you lapse a policy.
You know, something you said that really, really resonated with me is the evaluation of whether you need long-term care really should be included in your estate planning. You know, and when you sit down and you're going to do that, you know, and you're talking about, we talked about the financial burden on loved ones. I was reminded here, I had an argument with my little sister several years back who didn't have health insurance. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, what do you care? It's just me. Yeah. And I'm like, well, it's going to be me too, because, you know, I'm not going to, you know, not pay if something happens. You know, your loved ones are going to step in no matter how little the resources or the time that they have, you know, and that's, you know, what you're thinking about when you're planning.
Absolutely. And because in families, not everybody has the same financial success as others. And we're going to take care of sisters and brothers and friends and anybody else. And that's what I think people don't think about. And I can't emphasize that enough. Plan ahead. Think about what you're going to do. Talk about it. Make sure that people know what's important to you. I say do the planning when you're not in a crisis situation. Something happens to your spouse and you haven't discussed it, then, you know, now it's up to you to make the decision. Do you have your health proxy to your power of attorney to make those decisions? Do you know what that person wants? And these are kind of the crummy things, the creepy things to talk about. And who wants to talk about them when they're young in their 50s? But that's when I say talk about it, because it does have an impact on the entire family, not just the person. And not to do anything about it is a pretty selfish decision.
So let's talk a little bit how somebody gets enrolled. You know, we mentioned it's open season, it's health fairs. I know federal long-term care will be at most, if not all the health fairs, and they can come ask questions and fill out applications there. But tell us a little bit about the application process, you know, and because I know you don't have a true open season. Explain that to our listeners.
Well, we had two open seasons. The first one when launched the program in 2002 and one in 2011. So we don't have an annual open season. We're different than everybody else. All the other benefits. But the good news is that you can apply at any time. The only difference is that instead of the short form where you had 7 questions, you have to fill out 40 questions. And so it's a longer application, but if you're healthy, it doesn't make any difference. It's just a lot of questions that you have to go through. But you can apply at any time. We go out to the health fairs and we'll be at over 200 of them. We also have a virtual health fair, because we know that we can't be everywhere, and we get invited to over 400 of them. We try to answer questions that way. We send people to our website because it's got everything there, and that's www.ltcfeds.com. We send everybody there because it's people want to do self-serve. We have 80% of our applications coming in that way, and so all the information that you need is there. The premium calculator is there, so you can look at different levels of benefits that meet your budget, and you can actually fill out the application and submit it online. Now, we're very much high tech, but at the same time, we don't shy away from the high touch. During the webinars that we offer, we give you the ability to email us questions. We have the virtual health fair where we can do online chat. And we also have a group of internal certified long-term care consultants who can answer any questions that you have. So you can either call our 800 number to have them assist you if you have any questions, 1-800-LTC-FEDS. We make this very easy. Or there's some people who would prefer to schedule an appointment because they don't want to call the 800 number, and that's appointments@ltcfeds.com. And we can schedule a time, that's appointments@ltcfeds.com, where you can say, I'd like to talk to someone at 7 a.m. in my office. Here's my cell phone number. And that, and we'll, I'll have somebody call you. So we try to make it as easy as possible. And as while we encourage everybody with the tools, the electronic tools and digital events that we have, we also feel it's important to be available for the personal touch, whether we go to the health fairs, whether you call us, whether we do retirement seminars, which we do everywhere. We're available for you because we know it's a very, it can be a complicated decision.
So let me just go back to the open season point for a second. Let's say I'm a federal employee and I know that I want to purchase long-term care very soon or within, mm-hmm. you know, the next 1 or 2 or 3 years. You know, I hear when you say short form, long form, I hear that there's a possibility that there's going to be an increased premium on the long form. You know, so what do you say to the people who say, I want to wait around for the next open season? Will there be another open season?
Well, you asked a couple of questions. First of all, there's no difference in the premium if you do the short form versus the long form. The only difference is that you have to answer more questions. In terms of whether there's going to be another open season, OPM determines that because OPM is the administrator of this program. It is the only long-term care insurance program offered to feds, and they design it. They make all the decisions about the benefits, whether there's an increase, and whatever. So at some point, there may be another open season, but that could be 4, 5, 6 years out in the future. The first one was in 2002. The second one was in 2011. So if you think you want it, I would not suggest that you wait. Because you're going to be older, it's going to cost you more, and there is a chance that you will not make it through our underwriting process. So I wouldn't say wait. I would say do the research and get the ball rolling sooner than later.
Well, see, that's a good point you made, that there is no difference in price. You know, I incorrectly made that assumption mm-hmm. that if you're asking more questions, it's going through underwriting. So that's a good point to make.
Well, I can see why you would come to that conclusion, Tony, because unlike other private long-term care insurance programs, with our program, you're either in the program or you're not in the program. We don't do any substandard ratings, giving a different cost to somebody because their health isn't as good as somebody else's. Everybody pays the same premium. It's dependent on two things, your age when you purchase it and the benefits that you select.
Great. Well, that's all the time we have for the show today. I want to thank our guests, Walt Francis and Joan Melanson, and thank you for joining us. A reminder that Fed Talk is brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Hope everyone has a great weekend.